The following program is produced and distributed by KETR.org. You can help by visiting KETR.org and clicking donate.
All right, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Lions Roar Coaches Show, episode here 4, live from El Phoenix. And this is the part where we clap. This is a great crowd here at El Phoenix here on Monday night. We're going to start talking to our head volleyball coach, once again, Craig Case, a 2-0 week for the Lions with wins against Texas Women's and NM Kingsville. First matches in the field house. Great crowd, especially on Tuesday night with all the students there. How great was it to finally be home after being on the road for the first 11 matches?
Forever. I mean, we were on the road forever. We had to have a couple extra practices at home because we weren't used to it. But it felt pretty good. I don't know what felt better, actually getting back to home or getting into the W column in conference plays. So either way, we were pumped to accomplish both and really pleased with our crowds. And we've just got such good fans there. They're easy to play hard in front of, and certainly gives us an advantage.
In that first match against Texas Women's on Tuesday night, you pick up a 3-1 win there. Actually lose the first set, 25-22. Not great hitting, 12 kills, 8 errors in that first set, but definitely picked up as the night went on.
Well, it wasn't the strategy. We did not talk about losing the first set. It just it happened that way. You know, I thought the biggest thing was our tempo was a little slower in that first set than we had hoped for, and I think once we got our tempo going and played a little bit better defense and really had a chance to figure TWU out, that really got things going. And they played a really good match, too. So they certainly – we didn't roll over in that first set. I mean, they came in and they beat us, and it was our turn to respond. And then after that, we were able to keep the advantage.
Yeah, wound up hitting 240 for the entire match, 361 there in the second, which was a 25-15 win. A little bit more pep in the step coming out after. What was the pep talk like there between 1 and 2?
You know, not a lot. Just made some adjustments, and we had a couple of really good serving runs that, when you're serving teams aggressively and you're getting easy opportunities back, you're able to get some of your more exciting hitters going. And you know, when we've got two middles and Shelly and Bina, when we can get opportunities to set them easy balls, they're typically going to put it away, and it's going to get everybody pretty excited. So that was the biggest thing in that second set. I thought we had some more free ball opportunities, and once we took advantage of that, it really set things up.
One of the more exciting statistical notes from that match, the freshman from Guadalajara, Celeste Vela, she has a triple-double with 17 assists, 14 kills, and 12 digs. Describe to people why a triple-double in volleyball is a little bit – it's very rare.
It's very rare.
She's got two this season, ranked second in the country. I've been doing college volleyball for 13 years now, and I don't think I'd ever seen one in person until this year that I can remember. So kind of tell us why that's a little different.
Well, in her case, it's you don't normally get setters that get the opportunity to get kills as well. You'll see a lot of double-doubles out of setters with 15, 25 assists somewhere in there, and then 12, 13, 14 digs. But for her, we'll play her, she attacks out of the front row and then sets out of the back row. So she's got the opportunity to do both, and she's good enough to get kills. It's not a common skill alignment, but in her case, she's a really special player, and we're really excited to have her. And we try to leverage everything she can do. We try to put it into our offense and defense.
As a freshman with that varied skill set, that really, like you said, it's very rare. Mm-hmm. How much of that did you know she had coming in as a freshman? Because especially as a freshman who I'm guessing you recruited primarily over the internet.
Correct.
Seeing as she's from a foreign country.
Yep.
Did you realize what you had until you got her on campus?
Well, Sarah Carthor, our assistant, and I, we actually were looking at the film the same day. We're like, this kid's pretty good. Let's see if she's available. And so, the one thing we noticed, she obviously is a good setter, first off, and, had good size and good athleticism. But you can never tell, and it's a little deceptive, but, I mean, she's got a cannon, and mm-hmm. she hits the ball as hard as anybody in our team. And then the other thing you never really get a great feel for is just their game savviness and the small things that she does in a volleyball match that makes us a better team. And so once we had her and got her going with things, it was pretty clear that we were going to be able to use some of those things to our advantage. And we have, and we've typically done well with it.
Jaren Wacker picks up 21 kills that night. Great start to a great week.
Yep.
I'm not sure what her hitting percentage was, but it seemed like every time she touched the ball, it was a kill. Yeah, she hit 419 on 43 swings. That's pretty high rate for an outside hitter.
Yeah, it's pretty good. She had a couple errors in there that I wasn't super happy with. But
21-3 is a pretty good ratio.
Yeah, I wasn't happy with it. Jaren played great. And, I put a lot of pressure on her, and we put a lot of pressure on her as a team. And, we really feel like when Jaren shows up and has a good match, we got a great opportunity to win, and she did that, and we had a good opportunity to win. But, yeah, Jaren was awesome that night, and she's the type of player we think she can put numbers up like that almost every night.
That rolls into the Saturday match against A&M Kingsville. Sweep, first conference sweep, evens up our conference record. You win that first set 25-10. It was very fast and very efficient. Hit 526 and held them to -174. In that first set. That was a heck of a way to start the morning.
I would like to do that more often.
Yes.
If we could hold teams to -174 instead of us hitting -174, I would like that.
We haven't hit -174 very often this season.
Okay, we'll take your word for it.
Okay.
Maybe it just feels that way.
You're 9-4. You're ranked in the top 25 in the country. I don't know what you're feeling there to make you feel like you're hitting negative. We lead the country in kills.
That's just coach talk. It's never good enough for coaches, I guess.
So that first set, though, 25-10, we were up 10-2, I believe. It was just kill after kill after ace, yep, after block, after everything. And you could kind of took the wind out of Kingsville's sails. But they came back and fought back and sent it to extra points in the second set. That's a great way to start against a good opponent.
One of the things that hurt us is, and we do this to other teams all the time, too, if they're just blowing us out of the water, we start making some subs. And all of a sudden, you get a player in there that's got a fire today and is playing real good, and then that player is able to jump up. If it's closer, number three for Kingsville probably doesn't get in the match.
Yeah.
And she gets in the match and gave us all sorts of problems in that second set. So it was a good win. I think the two biggest things that happened in that first set is I thought we defended a lot better than they probably anticipated, and I thought we served a lot better. And it's our gym. I mean, we should serve that way in our gym.
11 blocks in the sweep, and we were looking at the stat sheet, you and I, and the libero, Savannah Rutledge, only had 4 digs in that match. And it's like, what the heck, man? Like, we thought I did something wrong for a second.
Well, first I thought you screwed up, and then I went and watched film to make sure she didn't have a bunch of errors. And when I saw that didn't happen, I thought, well, that's a good strategy, I guess.
I guess they hit against it, but we were also really strong at the net with 11 blocks and a sweep. That's a pretty high percentage there.
Yeah. No, again, it was a good defensive night. Obviously their game plan was to attack our setters and on defense. And, the good thing with us is we've got some pretty big pins, and so even when we're hitting out of system or we're hitting off of a secondary setter, we're able to get good swings and put some pressure on defense still.
That leads us into this week. 3 home matches Friday night against Cameron and Saturday afternoon against Midwestern State. And then you look at it, and now almost half of your home season is over in a 10-day span from the 11th to the 22nd. So 11 days. I need to learn how to count, apparently. But the 11th to 22nd, you've got half your home schedule already done. That's got to be great to have that big of a home run, especially with the home court advantage that we've had over the past few years. But it is kind of weird that it's all right there in a chunk.
Well, we were pretty light on home stuff early, so it's just kind of, at this point, I think it's evening our schedule out, and then from here on, I think it's pretty balanced as we go on. And so we're happy to be at home during this home stretch and taking advantage of it and making sure that we're in a good situation to keep getting some wins.
This DBU team coming in tomorrow night, 7-7 overall, but you were telling me that they've got some players. What kind of matchups do we look forward to out of these 3 matches this week?
Well, I think in all cases it's going to come down to I think ball control is going to be critical. If we can play at the tempo and the style we want to play at, it's going to give us an advantage. If we're not able to do that because we're lacking ball control, or we're not able to do that because we can't disrupt the other team's ball control, they're going to be tougher matches. But our goal is going to really get a focus on controlling the first contact, being aggressive, and making sure that we're able to get our hitters in positions to score and score as efficiently as they can.
The 40% way, maybe a little closer to halfway of the matches played for the regular season, based on not necessarily your record that you have so far at 9-4 overall and 2-2 in conference, but how do you feel about the progress from week one to now? There's been some ups. There's been huge weeks. There's been downer weeks. There's been a little bit of everything. But over the course of a whole season, how do you feel about it? Or a half season, how do you feel so far?
Well, my concern early was, that I was really hoping we hadn't peaked. And we had 2 really good weekends to start out, especially that second weekend. I was just nervous that we had peaked, and that was about as good as we were going to be. And I think one of the things that is special about this team that we've got now is they can – they can look and go, hey, we're doing some really some things really well. One of the things that this homestand has allowed us to do is spend a little bit more time on film watching ourselves. And then I think you saw a lot of that the last two matches is we corrected a lot of things that we weren't able to identify early. We were able to correct those. And so I think this team is special in that they can understand what they're doing well, and then they also accept, hey, we're probably not doing everything well, so let's focus on those things and keep getting better at those so we can get better as a team.
A little bit of stat nerd time.
All right.
We do lead the nation in kills overall, which
overall
is
kills.
Very impressive. And then Shelly Chaperone leads the conference in hitting percentage at .383, which is pretty impressive. And the other one that stood out to me, we also lead the conference in assists per set at 13. So with a strong hitting percentage like that and big kill numbers and big assist numbers, you see high rank. But to somebody who doesn't necessarily know volleyball that well, how does that happen? What's making that happen?
I mean, I think the biggest thing, the biggest two factors there is ball control. Our first contacts, you know, whether it's Savannah Rutledge, Daniela Santos, Riley Davidson, you know, anybody else that we've got really focusing on getting that first touch on the ball, they're getting good passes up to our setters. Yeah. And I think our setters have done a really good job of evening things out because, you know, the performances like Jaron had on Tuesday night with 21 kills, that's pretty strange for our team this year. Mm-hmm. We're usually 3, 4, 5 people in double-digit mm-hmm. kills, and we're not having one person really up standing out on their own. And so I think the balance of our offense, our setters being able to make really good decisions and getting hitters good opportunities to get kills, and then our first contacts have been real positive.
From a setter running the offense, it's got to be a little bit different when a football – they're kind of the quarterback of the offense,
yep.
Am I right?
Yep.
Okay, so it's a little bit different. Offense – calls in a play, the quarterback can make a read at the line and change it up. But volleyball, it's so random. Like, you never know where the serve's coming to. You never know how the pass is going to be. You never know if there's going to be a weird tip off of a block. All these weird things. So how much of it is set plays that you guys yell out or the team calls for, and how much of it is just the setter kind of going on their own?
Well, we really like our middles to be aggressive in those situations, to really kind of initiate our transition offense. And we want them to be running to areas where we know we can get scores. And then, you know, all the other pin hitters, the outside hitter and the right side hitter, they have a good idea based on what that middle's doing, on what they can attack. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll probably get a little bit more sophisticated with crossing and really moving a lot of hitters around on a serve receive when the other team's serving. But when we're digging a ball, I mean, we're getting that dig and we're trying to score as fast as we can. So, you know, that's probably a little less intricate, but it's a lot goes into scoring a point in volleyball.
So how much of it is the setter just saying, all right, this is what I'm doing, and how much of it is preset?
Well, it depends. If the coaches look at the setter and go, set so-and-so, set Bina, they better set Bina, or we've got somebody waiting to come in. You know, normally that'll go into the game plan. Hey, we think we can attack the middles, or hey, we think we can attack their right sides, or hey, we can attack in this area, so let's make sure we're getting good hitters in those positions a lot. So it's probably 50-50. Some of it's going to be feel by the setters and decision-making by the setters, and then the others probably discussions that we're having when they're coming out mm-hmm. and we're talking about who we need to be attacking.
Does that help running a two-setter system, is that you can make those adjustments as they sub out?
Well, normally it would, but Celeste is one of the
setters, comes off the floor.
She's going all the way around. So, we got to filter that through. And sometimes we'll wait for timeouts, or, you know, if we're playing well enough or we're pushing the other team and they're having to call a timeout, we'll use those opportunities to make those adjustments with her. But yes, it does help because we can talk with the other setters about those things.
All right. More volleyball stuff. This is all the in-depth volleyball stuff. In your opinion, all the random things that can happen on a volleyball floor, you've probably seen a lot of them. Sarah's definitely seen all of them. What is the most exciting way to end a point, in your opinion?
Oh, wow.
Because everybody – that's the thing I've learned about college volleyball over the years. You're going to score – somebody's going to score a minimum of 75 points over the course of the night, and they're going to celebrate like they won the Super Bowl 75 times. They really are. They get fired up at the end of every point. But some, like a service error, they hit into the net. It's like, okay. But if they
and people
get fired up. Which one is the most exciting to you?
Well, backing up, we celebrated another team's serving error like we won the national championship because Concordia St. Paul in that match,
the match
final point was a serving error. Didn't matter to us. We celebrated anyways. I don't know. It's either going to be a I'm just trying to think of – I like to win, so I get excited at every point. Watching our team, I'm thinking it's either It's either a big stuff block or it's a one-on-one just pounding the ball down.
Like almost flattening the ball.
Almost flattening the ball. The only thing that might – the only thing – and it hadn't happened, but now even – I was going to say if we got up and we hit somebody in the face with the ball. But that,
it
that
has
might,
happened.
That might – on a match point, that might take us back for a second. And, oh, she okay first? And then we'll celebrate. I think the stuff block is probably going to be the bigger one.
Okay, so see, there's good, intense volleyball knowledge. So we'll see you at the Fieldhouse Friday night, 6 o'clock, right? Yeah, and then Saturday at
2 o'clock.
I'm going to be there for all of them, so I have to make sure that I have it memorized.
I'm planning on being there, too. I was going to ask you when the matches were. Now I got to ask Sarah or somebody else that I know knows.
I have the internet for that normally, okay. But when you've got 5 of them in 11 days, you get them mixed up a little bit.
The internet's still around?
The internet is still all a right. thing. Hopefully there's still a few people watching us on it after this in-depth volleyball discussion.
I highly doubt it.
Something tells me Ken Case might be sending us a go loins here in a minute.
I hope so.
So, all right, man. Well, Coach Case, we'll see you there tomorrow night.
Thanks for having
Let's
me.
Give our Coach Case a round of applause. We'll be right back after a short break with our head football coach, Colby Carthel, here on the Lions Roar Coaches Show.
The program you're enjoying right now was made possible by a group of folks just like you who make contributions to public radio. Support programs just like this one. Visit KETR.org and click donate.
All right, we're back here on the Lions Roar Coaches Show here live from El Phoenix in Greenville, week 4 of the show. Thanks to the crowd for being here especially. We're here with our head football coach, Colby Carthel. The number one ranked Lions pull off a 21-11 win in Portales. Win number 13. First time we've had consecutive road wins in Portales ever. And the longest winning streak by either side in a long series that you've been a part of for a number of games. This is one of the better series in LSC football when you look at the numbers.
You bet. It goes way back. I've been a part of it all the way back into the mid-'80s as a ball boy on the sidelines at Greyhound Stadium. Old Coach Val used to come to town. I was actually part of Eastern versus East Texas, Ernest Hawkins, last year of coaching there in 85. And Coach Hawkins put it on the Greyhounds here in Commerce, Texas. So that is a great rivalry. Some really good games back and forth through the years, and another good one there Saturday night. Coach Kelly Lee has a really good ball club. I told him after the game they're the best 0-3 team in the country. And they've run into two, you know, playoff caliber teams and come up short, but they'll get things going there. I expect them to win 6 or 7 ball games this year, but we were fortunate to get up there and win a hard fought football game.
Looking at the stats from the night, Greenville local kid Carandal Hale picking up 101 yards on the ground, 14 carries, averaging over 7 a carry in that big 32-yard touchdown run that kind of sealed the deal there for us in the fourth quarter. Great performance by him and E.J. Thompson out of Cy Ranch. E.J. had 80 yards and total of 5.3 per carry for the Lion running backs.
Now, our run game really was on firing on all cylinders. It's good to get E.J. back. It was the best game of Randall's year so far this year, and maybe one of his best overall. He really ran the ball well, took care of it. Our offensive line had a tremendous night. They really opened up some holes and did a really good job protecting the quarterback. I think he got sacked one time. But
it was a fumble while he was running away. It was a statistical sack, but not a hard hit.
Busted protection pickup. Might have been on the running back, actually. But anyway, those guys really had a good night, and it's good to see Crandall go over 100 yards, and both those guys scored a touchdown. So run game really carried us.
Looking at the Eastern run game, we like to talk about us more than the opponents, but when you have an interesting setup like the triple option like they do, you expect them to get their yards on the ground. A defensive coordinator's nightmare when it's a numbers guy like Scott Power who wants to hold somebody under 100 yards rushing. Right. But if they never put the ball in the air, that's going to be kind of tough. But held them to 3 yards a carry, and one of them was on essentially the middle of the field, opened up on a pass play that was one of the only successful pass plays they had all night. It was a great rush defense, I thought.
Right. No, it being a former defense coordinator myself, I know that week's a sleepless week for preparing and getting ready, because it's just such a different offense, and you got to prepare differently. And a lot of times change what you're normally doing just to fit the triple option attack, and they did a tremendous job. I think Eastern was averaging over 7 yards per carry, and they were one of the top. They were the number one rushing offense in the country last year, and I think they were second going in this game. And they completely annihilated the run game.
Yeah.
Our defense really, really played well, held them to 3.2 a carry, which is under half their average. And the only explosive play they had was, like you said, a pass play. The quarterback, just stepped up and scrambled. And we were in a coverage, didn't have our eyes on him. So that was their biggest pickup. But defense really brought the wood and shut those guys down. A lot of three and outs, especially when we needed it there late in the game.
Well, late in the game, especially the overall third down conversion rate for the Greyhounds is 1 for 16. I thought I had it at 17 at one point. Yeah, 1 for 16. They did get 3 of 4 on fourth downs on a couple of short fourth downs after third downs.
Yep.
But most of them were on one drive that still didn't result in any points for them because of a turnover, if I remember right.
That's correct. You know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust doesn't work very good anymore. Yeah. And I don't think there's a cloud of dust, but there were some pellets from the turf, you know. So the defense, again, just really did a good job. Brooks Setoff had a heck of a night leading the charge, and D-line played well. Secondary had them completely shut down. That's the thing. In years past, we've done a good job against Eastern, against the run. They've usually had some success on third down, throwing the ball, and it makes you mad. But, you know, you say, well, we're going to make them beat us. Doing something they're not comfortable doing, throwing the ball. They had 6 yards passing.
Yeah, Saturday. 2 completions on 7 attempts, but 5 sacks and the busted play. So 14 pass plays resulted in a total of 44 yards, and 38 of them were on the ground.
Correct. It was a really, really good night. And we had 5 sacks and left about 3 or 4 more out there with some missed alignment, missed assignments. But other than that, it really, you know, we're really having to dig to find a complaint here on our defense because they played exceptional.
Brooks Setoff, as you said, led the charge. I think that might be an understatement. 18 tackles in one game, that's a heck of a performance. He was, and I did the math, he was in on a tackle on a quarter of their plays.
Yes.
It was right at 25%. He also had 2.5 sacks and 4 tackles for a loss. He was everywhere on every play.
You would think that numbers like that might be Lone Star Conference Player of the Week this week.
You would think that would happen, but it did not.
He's our player of the week.
I'm okay with that. I think that's a good choice. Yep. I feel like you've done good analysis there. One of the other defensive players I wanted to, a little farther down the stat sheet, but Jalen Edwards Cooper wound up with 2 sacks, 2 solo sacks from a cornerback position. Kind of a spy, it looked like, on the quarterback sometimes. He would get about 2 seconds to sit there, and he'd just nail him right in the face. I mean, that was very impressive.
Not to nail him in the face. That's a penalty.
Oh, yeah, especially now. You have to let go.
Just tackle him.
So he hit him in the appropriate area with the appropriate amount of force, and nobody was offended. But both of those sacks by Jalen were very impressive, and both came at very important times.
No, he did a good job. That was coaching the game plan there with his assignments, to stop the run. He's playing our nickel position, and when they did pass, he had some trigger keys, and he triggered on them and brought the quarterback down. Did a good job. You know, that's a good offense, and really pleased with the defense performance.
My other highlight play on the defense, I thought especially, was Garrett Blueball did a really good job getting in the backfield. He got – it kind of turned into a strip sack fumble. There was a lot going on in that play, and from the video angle where we were, you could see what was going on, but it wasn't the clearest in the world, and then – Garrett's got the ball. That was a heck of a play. If I remember right, that was a third down as well.
No, it was another good stop. And Garrett's played really well this year. And again, that front seven, you know, playing off a lot of cut blocks, and it's an aggravating game to play as a linebacker. But they fought through it and made a lot of plays and kept us ahead the whole time. And like our offense got off to a good start, but then kind of sputtered, and the defense really picked up the pace and won a hard fought ball game.
Talk a little bit about Marquise Wimberly's catch. He had one catch in the game for 30 yards, but I'm sure you've seen the video and the side angle. He got both feet in there. That was a Sunday catch.
That would have been good. That would have counted yesterday.
Yes, yeah, that was a very impressive catch.
Great catch, and a good throw by Preston. He put it where Marquise could catch it and nobody else, and mm-hmm. Marquise got it and came down with it. And so that put us up, set us up first and goal. I think that was the first touchdown, and not been the second, but. Did a good job.
And then Tristan Perry in the punt game, punted more than we would like, 7 punts in a game. But talk a little bit, the wind was kind of blowing towards the right of the press box. It was very strong in one direction or the other, correct? Okay, so he winds up with a 43.6 average and a 40-yard net with mm-hmm. not a single kick return off of a kickoff by Kristoff or a punt by Tristan in the game. The punt and kickoff game was exceptional.
It's not fun to watch when there's no returns or what have you. There's not a lot of exciting plays, but you know, you do the math on it on the net punt and the net kickoff, where we were, where they were, averages up to just over 140 yards total.
Wow,
140 yards that's hidden yards that you don't talk about. That's not in the newspaper article. Hey, they had 140 more yards than they did in the kick game, but that equivalents to points, and usually they say 100 yards, 7 points. Well, that gave us about 9 points there if you do that math. And
nine pretty important points.
Yeah, but did a great job. Tristan Perry had the play of the game, the 68-yard punt.
Rolled out of bounds at the 5.
It was a tight ball game, and, one-score game, and he came through and delivered. And his punts in the first half, into the wind, that's when the wind was really howling, about 22 miles an hour. I think he had a 36, a 38, and a 34 net punt into the wind. So, he got player of the game, special teams for us.
So we've got our defense player of the game, Brooke Sadoff. Defense player of the game was Tristan Perry. Who would have been your offensive player of the game for that game?
Probably the offensive line, just really imposed their will and gave us plenty of time to throw and opened up some good holes. So I'd have to give 5 of them out. Those guys did a nice job.
That's 5 dinners, 5 game balls. That can get pretty expensive right there. But, if you're going to need one unit to perform at its best, that's probably one of the best ones to have.
Well, it's an award, so we'll take it out of the SID budget.
All right, perfect. That sounds good. Noted. I'll spend SID money on that kind of thing. I'm okay with that. And then from a coaching perspective, how frustrating is it to not have the ball at all in the first half? 8 minutes of possession in the first half, still had a 14-3 lead, but it felt like I was watching a lot of triple option handoffs and a lot of pitches and a lot of guys sitting there waiting on the play clock and not a lot of Lion offense. It's hard to score without the ball,
right?
And it's got to get frustrating.
Well, and going into that game, the possessions will be limited, and that's the style of play. So you got to make them count, which we did that first quarter jump out and got a 14-0 lead, and then we had a hard time throwing the ball on. Part of it was some of the things Eastern was doing, part of it was self-inflicted on ourselves. But when you are on offense and you throw 2 out of 3 times and they're incomplete, the clock stops. So you had the ball for 33 seconds, and then you gave it back to them, and they chew up 3 or 4 or 5 minutes of clock. So that's where the time possession really got skewed a little bit. But, we made a count there and got the lead that we needed to. And then second half there in the fourth quarter, I thought the offense did a really good job again closing it out, getting us a drive and a score when we needed to. And then the 4-minute offense, we took over with, I think, 4 minutes and 38 seconds left. And still a tight ball game, and we went to 4-minute mode, and we were able to hang on the ball, no turnovers, and got 2 or 3 first downs and ran the clock out. So that's what good football programs do, and those guys, hats off to them for getting that done.
Wrapping up that game, another 10-point win on the road after a long road trip, 8 hours on the road for each of the last 2 weeks in different directions. How nice is it going to feel to get to play in front of the home crowd and not be on a back-to-back 8-hour bus rides?
Oh, it'll be really nice. It'll help my voice, I'm sure, too. So we didn't get much sleep Saturday night. Rolled into Commerce 8:15 Sunday morning. So
just in time for breakfast and church.
There you go. I hit up Sweeties and did them a little business, and everybody was happy at the Carthel House. So it's going to be great to play at home, Community University Day. And last year we had a tremendous turnout, and I think it coincides with the Boat Arc Bash. So we're really excited about where we're at and where we're going to be, playing Saturday night, a great only top 25 matchup in the country, and all eyes are going to be fixed on Commerce, Texas, as Colorado State Pueblo comes to town.
Talking a little bit about this Pueblo program, a little bit of a newer program. Used to play back in the 80s, had a dead period there, and then came back and won a national championship, if I'm not right, 6 years after they restarted the
program?
There in 2014. Strong league in the RMAC, has had some ups and downs depending on who's on top, but lately it's been the Thunderwolves.
Oh, they've been very dominant here for about the past decade there in that league, and we've got some past with them as a staff. We've played them several times at our previous institution, regular season and the playoffs. So, Coach Riston, the head coach there, is a good friend of mine. He's on the national committee. He's a respected peer in the Division II world, and he's got a great program. This team he's got this year is supposedly as good as the one they had in 2014. That's what everybody's kind of said about them. So I've told our team I expect them to be the best team we've faced at home in my 6 years here. So we've got our jaw set, and we're going to have a good week of practice because we know we got a good football team. I think a great football team coming to town, and their back's against the wall. They let one get away from them. It would have been a top 10 or maybe top 5 matchup, but they squandered one this weekend up there playing another top 25 team, Colorado School of Mines, and had them beat, outgained them by 270 yards, and then fumbled there in the third quarter, and Mines took it back 90-something yards for touchdowns, a 14-point swing, and that's what they got beat by. So their back's against the wall now, and so not only were we going to get their A game, must be a number one defending national champions, but now they're fighting for their season. So it should be a classic matchup.
This is a little interesting, having two non-conference games back-to-back in weeks 4 and 5. That's not very common in Division II. So we're coming into two opponents that we don't necessarily know that much about as a fan base. It's not a common – it's not like a Southeastern Oklahoma or somebody down the road that we've seen before. What is it that the Thunderwolves do that they bring to the table on offense and defense?
Well, they are very, very well coached and play very, very hard in all three facets of the game. Usually you can watch film and you can say, oh, they're weak here, they don't play hard here, they're deficient. But these guys are, they play hard every play. And that's bottom line, good football. Scheme-wise, they'll run right over you. They were leading the nation in rushing, I think, going in this past week. So they've got two tremendous senior backs that they're as good as we faced in terms of tailback position. Defensively, they are really, really strong. They can shut you down in a hurry. Mines last week was number third or fourth in the country in passing, averaging 380-something yards a game. They had 88 against Pueblo.
Wow.
So they'll shut you down in a hurry and make you like it. So, and just a physical team. They're well coached. Their offensive line coach is his second tour of duty there, and he's had our respect for many, many years, and he gets that O-line playing at a very high level. So, we're going to have our jaw set and be ready for a battle, because we will be battle-tested Saturday night.
When you describe that team and what they do, it sounds a lot like what some of the same things people say about us. Physical, talented, plays hard on every down. Is this a true strength-on-strength matchup?
I don't know anybody's ever said we're well-coached.
Well, I don't know if I said that line.
No, you didn't. No, it is going to be a great matchup and just two really good That's why everybody pays the money on pay-per-view to watch two heavyweights fight. That's what this is going to be. Two programs that are, perennial top 10, top 5, that can compete and will compete each and every year for national championships. So this group's just like the Grand Valleys and the Northwest, and they're that caliber of program. So it'll be fun. I hope everybody comes out and see some good football. You don't get matchups like this very often out in East Texas.
Well, especially not in Division II. That was going to lead to my next question. You look at the D1 landscape over the first 4 weeks or so, you've got your Clemson A&M, Texas USC, Ohio State TCU. You get those big intra-regional games, and this is a regional game for us because they're in the RMAC and it's the next conference over.
Right.
But why, in your opinion, do you think, from a coaching perspective, more Division IIs don't schedule big games like this?
Well, it's hard. All these conferences and their silly closed scheduling. All they do is play each other.
Yes.
A whole lot of fun, I'm sure. Won't go into that, but it poses a big problem, for scheduling. That's why you got somebody like Lockhaven coming all the way in from. I don't even know what state they're coming from.
Pennsylvania.
There you go.
It's a cold one. It's up there, top right.
You talk about them not knowing much about us. I don't know much about them, but that's what you've got to do. You got to reach out, and you'll see in next future years we're going to be playing all over the country, over on the West Coast, Northeast, and so it's hard to find good games. It's hard to find good matchups with so many close schedules in the conferences that they don't have to face. You don't have that problem in Division I, but you got a lot of other problems, so that's why D2 rocks.
Yes, D2 is the best. I do wish that they would give us a 12th week to play the 11 games.
Yes. We're working on that. Coaches Connection, I'm on it. We're actually talking about that next Monday at 11 o'clock.
I mean, I think that's – having an 11-game schedule, I think, is the right amount of games to play, but not giving schools the opportunity to either schedule out a conference or have an off week, even if they're in a closed schedule. I think that really kind of hurts the student-athlete experience and their well-being, because by the time you get to the national championship game, that team's either played 15 or 16 games.
No level of football plays more consecutive weeks than Division II athletes. NFL doesn't do it. They have two mandated off weeks. Division I doesn't do it. D3, they're limited on a 10-game schedule. So nobody that plays an organized game of football past the high school level would play more weeks in a row than a Division II team that goes to the national championship. So if we take care of our business, there's a chance we could play 16 straight weeks without a week off, which is terrible for your health.
And it's more than an NFL team balance would be.
Yes.
Because they'll play 16 in 17 weeks.
Yes, or 18. I think they have one or two off weeks. But
yeah, I think they're working.
We're working on fixing that, Josh, I promise you.
Okay, well, I didn't even talk to you about that beforehand, but we got good radio out of it, and hopefully some other people see it and realize, what the right thing to do is.
You bet.
All right, Coach, we'll be there at Community Day, 2 p.m. volleyball match followed by a 6 p.m. football game. Tailgate opens at 1 o'clock. Should be a great game, great day on campus for Community Day. Hope to see everybody there. Let's give a hand for Coach Colby Carthel. Next time you'll hear him after the game at Memorial Stadium. We'll be right back after this break here on the Lions Roar Coaches Show.
This show and others like it from KETR.org are made possible by generous contributions from listeners just like you. Donate today at KETR.org.
All right, we're back on the Lions Roar Coaches Show, episode 4, here live from El Phoenix in Greenville, Texas. And we've brought for our closer tonight Taylor Phelps, the Executive Director of Lions Champions Fund and Associate Athletic Director for Development. That's a lot of words. What do they mean?
Thank you, Josh. Thanks for having me, and thank you. We're here in Greenville at El Phoenix.
Yes, so, I just said that part.
Yes, where we where first off, I want to say that we do have our Community Day game on Saturday, and the Greenville community has been hugely supportive of that, and we'll talk about that later. But what that means basically is ticketing, corporate partnerships like we have here with the Firebird Restaurant Group at El Phoenix and Snuffers in La Ventana, and then our Lions Champions Fund, or our philanthropic giving arm of the athletics department. And we've seen that grow over time, along with our partnerships and our Lions Sports properties and our ticketing. So essentially, we have, you know, so many supporters that contribute in all three of those areas, from being corporate partners of friends of businesses, or they own their own, being our season ticket holders, purchasing group tickets, and also making financial contributions and giving them to our student athletes in support of our best-in-class mission of best-in-class experience for our student-athletes.
That's a very good answer. That's a very good answer, especially with your boss in the audience. So you talk about the three different ways we bring in money to the athletic department. Tickets, I think, is probably the easiest for people to wrap their mind around. I give you money, I get a ticket, I get to watch the game.
Sure. That's
pretty simple. Philanthropic giving, that's pretty simple as well. Mm-hmm. And corporate sponsorships, it makes sense. How many different people, organizations, however you want to put it, are contributing to Lion Athletics to help our student athletes out at this point?
Sure. I think Coach Carthel's told the story a lot of times that when he first got here, we had, I think, 5 season ticket holders. Is that correct, Coach? 5 season ticket holders.
That doesn't seem like very many in a 10,000-seat stadium.
No. And now at this point, you know, our season ticket holders for football, we have chairbacks, Andrew and Linda Mission, is over 500. So, you know, that's grown tremendously as a result of what Coach Carthel's been able to achieve. But also, you know, our outreach efforts. A lot of people just didn't know they could be season ticket holders, and they didn't have chairback opportunities. And then you talk about corporate partners. We have corporate partners in the restaurant industry, hotel, medical, you know, beverage distributors.
Just about everything, right?
Yeah, car dealer is our title sponsor, Ford Family Auto. So, you know, we have them spread very far across the spectrum there. And then for giving, we have gifts all the way from New York State, you know, alums from all over the country that give back. So, and in different ways, a lot of people give their time. You know, they tell people our story. They share our story on Facebook. They watch the Lions Roar show, and they share it with their friends.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, everyone. We have those who, you know, give their talent and resources and connect people to us and refer them. And then we have, you know, people who make that financial commitment to support our student-athletes. So, and the three intertwine a lot. You know, the same – they're not separate. The same people that you see you know, sitting in our chair back season ticket spots in football, or have season tickets to basketball or volleyball or soccer or softball, are the same people who own businesses and support us that way, are the same people who, you know, yearly make a $5,000 Champions Fund annual gift. So, you know, people support us in all three ways, and a lot of times it's the same groups, and then other people choose to do it in other ways. But, you know, we've been able to grow you know, a very strong base of people who choose to make that commitment and support our kids and support our university and our entire region, which I think ties into perfectly to what we're going to be celebrating on Saturday.
With Community Day.
Yeah.
Which is one of my favorite made-up words that we've made up since I've been here. I've made up a lot of words in meetings, and I think Coach Carthel and I like to make up words when we're up here. There were a couple tonight that I'm not 100% sure were in the dictionary, but mm-hmm. that's completely okay. But Communiversity Day, explain that particular made-up word.
Well, it's three words, Josh. Okay. The first one is community.
I like that word.
Which I think, if we're there's community. So yes. I think that encompasses Hunt County, Hopkins County, even Dallas and the Metroplex and all the areas that really touch our university. So many of our alums, so many of our current students are from the greater Northeast Texas region. And I think that's really our community. And then when we talk about our university, that's obviously
the university.
The university, the land where classes are held and where we have our competitions and things like that. And that's really our student body and our faculty and staff, and our alums to a certain degree as well. And then our city is Commerce, and they do a great job of supporting us as well. And we bring the three together, and it's unique that Boat Arc Bash is the same weekend this year, because that's really a celebration of city along with our game against Colorado State Pueblo. That's a celebration of our city and a way that we can bring those two together and have a big event like, a top 25 matchup that night during that event is really cool and unique. And, not every town in Northeast Texas is having a top 25 matchup and a city celebration in the same weekend. So hopefully a lot of people come out.
As Coach Carthel said, no other city is having a top 25 matchup
this
week besides us. So that works out even better. I've been in the university now for about 26 months, I believe it is. You came in about a year after me in this position, but you've been involved with this university a lot longer. You were a graduate of the Honors College. Sam Walker gave you the privilege of being on the basketball team and getting go on a few road trips here and there.
Uh-huh.
So you are a former student athlete. Talk a little bit about how that helps you relate to what you're trying to do with your job and telling the story of this university.
Well, I'm from East Texas too, so knowing Commerce and Greenville and Sulphur Springs and the area also helps. When I came back, I wasn't having to learn where, the Sam Rayburn Student Center was, or the BA building, or Whitley Hall, or the Fieldhouse. I didn't have to learn the mm-hmm. lay of the land. So that instantly gives you an advantage of that you know just the geographical space you're dealing with. You know how far you are from Dallas. You know that Greenville and Sulphur Springs are the larger communities surrounding Commerce. And you kind of have an idea of East Texas in general. And then some of the people. I mean, a lot of people I met as a student athlete are still here and still in having an impact and supporting and helping. And so that gave me a leg up there too as well. And I learned a lot of things from Sam Walker that
we
can
all
talk
have.
About later.
Yeah. So one of the other things I want to rewind and look back on was one of the more stressful nights of our lives mm-hmm. until it happened. And then it was one of the biggest accomplishments, I think, professionally. I've had even a tiny bit of helping pull off was Night with Champions.
Oh, yes.
The first one. Talk a little bit about how all that came together, what we accomplished, and what we hope to accomplish with that in the future.
Stress might be an understatement, but
we didn't sleep very much that week.
No, we did not. And so it was the first time we had done something of this kind that I know of in the university's history, in having a fundraising event that was also a celebration, and really bringing people together. And we honestly didn't know, we just kind of were like, let's do it and see what happens. We put it together in really a couple months, because once the championship happened, we kind of all, okay, Christmas. Then we came back and we were full force on how to celebrate this thing having something where our student athletes could be in school in the summer, could take courses that get them closer to graduation, that keep them working out and getting ready for the next season. That's what was special about it. The food was great. The celebration was fun. Hearing all our coaches talk about the season was awesome, but it's something we want to continue because it brought a lot of people together, it got a lot of people excited, but it also was supportive of our student-athletes, and that's what was the most important thing about it. And the local community there, too, really came out to support. Without the auction items donated, we wouldn't have been able to raise that kind of money. And without businesses, supporting with table sponsorships and things like that, we wouldn't have been able to do that. And hopefully we've kind of set a standard, and we're going to do it again next year. So
we are going to do it again next year. And I think we'll probably be less stressed out about it now that we've pulled it off once.
We kind of have a blueprint, but we definitely ran around for a couple weeks there pretty nervous and stressed out, but I think we'll feel better about it the second time around.
From this development and LCF perspective, what are some of the things we can expect to see in the rest of the school year besides another Night with Champions event?
Sure. Well, we're always taking donations, and you can go to lionathletics.com and go to our Lion Champions Fund page there on the top the top banner links, I guess is what they'd be called. But you can go there and read more about our story, or the story of our student athletes and how you can contribute. But we always put out new information right around Christmas. You have a giant hand in helping design that information because my computer skills are very limited. But it's a lot of outreach. I mean, at football, we do a lot of outreach in our specific days, contacting alums and inviting them to events. And we really want to get grow our T Association, a former Letter Winners Association in here at Commerce. It's called the T Association. And to really grow that and have a lot more of our student athletes come back and be celebrated, but also feel like they're a part of something and they're contributing a lot like some of our fellow institutions have, and we're trying to figure out the best way to really formulate that, to spread that message, and really kick it off. So you can expect to see that in the fall. So
all right, well, that's all the serious part. And since this is the first time we've had a rookie on the radio show since we've moved it to the new locations here in week 4, potentially the most important question ever asked in the history of the Lions Roar Coaches Show. Are you ready? Is a hot dog a sandwich?
Okay, is a hot dog a sandwich? Let me think about that.
It's a simple question.
No, because a sandwich is between two pieces of bread. If you were to cut the hot dog bun into two pieces, it would become a sandwich. But until then, it is more like a pita pocket or a calzone because it's one singular piece of bread that is attached.
This is the most convoluted answer to a yes or no question I've heard in a very, very, very long time. So short answer is a hot dog a sandwich?
No.
Okay, good. Proper answer. Well, that's been our Executive Director of the Lion Champions Fund and Associate AD for Development, Taylor Phelps. Give him a round of applause, everybody. And that'll be our final guest here tonight on the Lions Roar Coaches Show. Don't forget, we've got volleyball at home on Friday and Saturday. Soccer's on the road on Friday and Sunday. Cross country on the road on Saturday. You can find about all those events on lionathletics.com and look ahead to our winter in spring sports as well on the best website on the internet. I've been Josh Make. You've been watching the Lions Roar Coaches Show. Go Lions.